morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you're consuming this broadcast. Thank you for tuning in to Bus Talk. I'm your host, Ayan, and you can find all the episodes of Bus Talk on the Bus Talk website, www.bustalk.in. That's BASTALK.IN. Bustalk.in. Today's episode is going to be exciting as always. I have a whole bunch of things to share with you. Before that, let me give you a quick update on the latest listeners across the world. We have a new entrant in Zambia, Ghana, and people of Norway. Thank you so much. I don't recall knowing anybody in those regions. So very, very appreciative of you tuning in, even if it is for one episode. If this is something that floats your boat, then great. Welcome to Bus Talk. For the first time listeners, Bus Talk is a simple, slow burn, straight talk. No mumbo jumbo, no fluff stuff, no life-changing advice, no get quick promotion angle, nothing. It is an attempt to make you think, make you reflect. And if you exit this episode thinking, I didn't think about that. That sounds interesting. I think that's a good job done. And for the existing listeners who've been with Bus Talk for a number of years now, thank you so much for continuing to listen to Bus Talk and share with like-minded people. In the last episode, which was about the biases for or against women, if you haven't heard that, Beyond Biases, breaking assumptions about hiring women with a career gap or in their advanced years and some of the other challenges they face, I thought that episode was received rather well. Give you some statistics. 54.7% of the listeners were women. 41% were male. 3.8% did not specify. And the age group that listened to it the most was 35 to 44, almost 35.8%. And about 13.2% for folks between 45 to 59. The reason I share this is because that's exactly the target audience for which that episode or content was made. And Bus Talk in general is probably more relevant for people who are around the 5-year work X mark through to, say, the 15-year work X mark. This is not to say that folks less than 5 years of work X or more than 15 years of work X won't find this content relevant, but they will find it relevant from different lenses for those early career stages, right? If you are in your first year, second year, or third year of your work X, well, most of the situations, conversations, and content that you hear on Bus Talk is something that is upcoming for you. It's coming soon for you. And so listen to it with an open mind. And as always, do what you think is the best for you. The best mantra of all time is, of course, WW, whatever works. If you're doing something that works well for you, if it floats your boat, that's the one to follow. All other content from anybody else around the world can set aside. So that's the whole thing. However, there are instances where people realize that, hey, I tried this, but it did not quite work out that well. So some of the content on Bus Talk is probably a reflection and probably will make a little more relevance to those people who have tried a couple of things and they may not have worked or may have worked well, but in parts. So the content that you hear will kind of give you a sense that, oh, okay, maybe I could try this a different way or a additional way or something like that. And if it doesn't, then that's okay as well. And of course, for leaders who are listening to this, who are in their 20-year work X mark or beyond, the reason this content might be relevant for you is for you to look back and reflect on your leadership evolution, your journey. What did you do differently, or are you doing the same? And love to hear some thoughts from you as well. There are lots of leaders who tune in to this podcast. I know that for a fact. And so I get a lot of ideas and opinions and suggestions that, you know, this is a way of thinking about it. And so Bus Talk is almost like a amalgamation of, you know, the leadership thoughts. And the goal was to not again sound very leadership-like, for lack of a better expression there, in the sense, cut out all the big words, come down to the basic, simple net of the story. What is it that you're trying to talk about? So bus talk, generally, the sentiment of bus talk is around having a straight, simple conversation. So let me set the context for today's conversation, today's episode. It's the simple question, can US work culture bridge the gap with Indian work culture or Indian corporate values? Many of us interact with folks in the United States. Maybe your HQ is in US or your stakeholder is in US or vice versa. It could be that you are the stakeholder for a team that works in United States. So when these two different cultural sets meet on a common platform, what could possibly go wrong? Does it go wrong? Does it work well? I mean, there are cases and instances where the relationship has been absolutely fabulous, where people have really enjoyed lifelong bonding and they've become great pals outside of work. And there are instances of absolute disconnect where they just don't get it. And once it goes on a wrong trajectory, then it goes completely off the charts. And so in this episode, I'm going to see and examine a couple of common things that we interact with. Of course, also bear in mind, this is largely with United States, interaction with United States, but some of it will have an overlap with, say, folks in EMEA or Europe, not EMEA, mostly EU. Very different in Middle East and completely different in APAC. That probably warrants a separate episode, as in the cultural connotations working with, say, leadership in APAC is very different from the cultural connotation of working with someone in the EU region and slightly different in United States. So in this episode, we'll try and stick to, because these topics are so vast, so deep, and so complex that it's incredibly difficult to succinctly fit everything into one episode. So I'll stick to one, which is the US work culture and the Indian work culture, and see what are the overlaps, what are the areas which potentially could become difficult. And if you are one who is in a current situation dealing with similar predicament, what is it that you can probably think of and do to make the equation even better? So let's dive in. Start with a great example. My first visit to the United States was way back in 2001. And our manager at the time, or in fact, our skip level, not the manager, welcomed us, you know, as salespeople. Meeting customers and all was one of the goals and agendas. And we managed to crack some good deals. So the skip level manager was impressed. And the gentleman was Indian, but naturalized citizen of United States, a person of American, but a person of Indian origin, to be politically correct. So the gentleman took us out for dinner. And for those who don't know, Hooters is a restaurant which has a slight bit of history to it, and I will leave it at that. If those who don't know what Hooters is, you may want to Google it or search it. But we went to Hooters, and the general engagement and the conversation was going just fine till some of the waitresses came and engaged in a conversation with the senior leader. Now, sense of humor does not generally and easily come despite being in the United States for a long time for this person. And he, instead of having a small talk, chit-chat kind of a conversation, started speaking about career options and choices for some lack of a better explanation. I don't remember accurately. To which the waitress said, "You guys are not so fun." There was stunned silence on the table, that we were all, of course, quiet, because that was our skip level boss. And Hooters is a fun place, right? Make no mistake. It's a fun, lively, light place, you know, general banter or, you know, a little bit of small talk. And that's a general culture. And here this gentleman got a little flummoxed, I would imagine, instead of having the small chit-chat, got a little conscious that some of us youngsters were there, and he had to maintain the gravitas and, you know, the seriousness of it all. And then he started talking about career options and all that. So that kind of didn't go well, as you can imagine. But fast forward to about a year later, or maybe a couple of years later, I was at Vegas in MGM Grand, or I don't know where it was, a kickoff. And post all the serious events and everything, it's the party time, right? You, in the night. And at the restaurants in Vegas, the atmosphere and all, you know, the senior sales folks, all the leadership and old folks, old bunch of folks landed up. And as usual, we were still relatively young in the system, and we were all, you know, being polite and courteous. And suddenly we saw some of our senior leaders, not the same person, the other. And this time it was the Caucasian senior leader. That person, and I won't give you the more details, that person stood up on the table and started dancing. And this was, of course, well into the night and all that. It was such a fun experience, such a, you know, for me, it was like a eye-opening experience that leaders need not be grumpy and serious or pretend to look serious even after work. What you do after work has no bearing or reflection to how you are at the workplace. I was super impressed with the fact that the same person could hold such a serious, deep conversation about work, you know, the technology of everything else and strategy and all that, but come 7 p.m., this almost like a split personality. It's like totally different. This person is, oh my God, kind of thing. I became a big fan of that person. I wish someday I'd go on to become that kind of leader. Again, fast forward many years, when I became a leader, I was conflicted in my mind when in the early stages of being a leader that, oh, you have to be this serious person who has to establish a certain gravitas and command a respect, or, you know, those kind of perceptions and notions that you have. Oh, I am the manager now, so I have to be and behave and look more responsible and look all knowledgeable and all that kind of thing. And then I realized over a period of time that why was I trying to be Superman? It's probably not required. And I reflected back on some of these experiences and I just relaxed and started bringing out, and it was not an easy thing, the Clark Kent in me. To stop being the Superman, start to bring the Clark Kent, and like, hey, I'm a regular guy. I am your manager at this point, and point is, let's not make such a big deal about it. So when I eased myself with this reality, it became much more easier to interact with the team, because I had no reason to impress the team beyond a point. I had to win their confidence that I am the right person to lead them through their career journey, their tenure in this role. But beyond that, I need not have presented a Superman-esque version of myself. Anywho, so this was the, you know, evolution of a leadership journey, as it were. But back to our cultural exchanges. So you see, in these two instances where the Indian skip level boss was very conscious, very fine gentleman by this, just so that you know, very accomplished, very decorated, as it were, one of, you know, the pillars of the area that they worked in. And so nothing wrong with being absolutely polite, nice, and a very humble gentleman. And on the other other instance at Vegas, the cultural conversation was totally different. So it often made me think that why is it that we do not make peace with ourselves as classical Indian managers? Are we too caught up with what people will think? What will they say? What happens if I do this? Vis-a-vis just be our authentic self. Not to say, I mean, some of the classical Indian managers would say, well, I am authentic like this only. This is the way I am. I think I'm super authentic. Well, why do I need to be like how my American counterpart is? What's wrong with being the way India is? And of course, I'm dealing with India in India, for India. So then why do I need to, you know, those kind of conversations. And I have no intention of changing you. Absolutely. So if that's, again, as always, if that's what floats your boat, great. But for many instances, I see when these two cultures cross-culturally get crossed with each other, there is a level of conflict. There's a level of challenge, a challenge of understanding what they say versus what they mean, challenges in what they're thinking versus what you're thinking. And then there is this uncanny relationship which you have to maintain, especially what if they are your stakeholders, if they are your seniors. At a peer level, still a little more manageable, but at a stakeholder level, slightly more complicated. Think of some of the HR practices that are prevalent in the United States. If the same HR practices are enabled in India, will they work as well? The definition of freedom of expression that works in the United States, does the same freedom of expression work in India? The rules, the laws that were created are for the culture, the people of United States. When you start to replicate it globally across different cultures, different regions, different ways that culture is administered and received, then the outcome and impact of it is also very different. So give you some examples, like communication styles. Typically, classically in US, it's a short sentence, a direct, straightforward communication style. In contrast to that with India, it is slightly long-winded. It's a little indirect, polite, context-sensitive approach to conversations. And therefore, misunderstandings arise for the lack of patience, among anything else. Like, come on, cut to the chase and come to the point. While the person in India wants to give you a pretext, a context, then the actual content, and then the subtext, and you're like, dude, don't think I'm stupid. I get that. And this guy on the other end is like, well, is that not a normal thing to do? Because the US guy might go back, what the person I have to deal with understands the same language. The customer landscape that we have, they understand the same language. So then how do I now change the way I think? Think of a classical sales conversation, a sales deal. The way we sell in the United States to customers based in the United States is the same way possible in India. Highly unlikely. For example, a matured economy like United States, it's easier to have a virtual conversation. That you pick up the phone and say hi, and probably, I mean, they have gone past the stage of picking up phone calls, I guess, where everything hits a voicemail. Upwards, if you make 100 calls, 98 of them will probably hit the voicemail. But email communication, virtual communication is the order of the day. It's like, why waste time traveling from Sacramento to Los Angeles and for another meeting? I don't know. Best bet is to have a quick virtual conversation, and it works perfectly fine. The same logic can hold true for India, but it doesn't work too well. So traveling from, say, Noida to Gurgaon is not a smart thing to do, even if it is just, what, 57, 60 kilometers. It might take upwards of 1.5-2 hours to cover that 60 kilometer distance. So one customer in sector 62 of, say, Noida, and the other customer in sector 51 of Gurgaon, which is, you know, 180 degrees opposite. Well, does that make sense? But in India, it does. People have to go meet the customer, sit in front of them, have a chat, have a pleasant conversation, talk about the weather, I don't know, have those quote-unquote sweet nothings, and then have... So if I were to give you a structure of a typical conversation, is like you meet and greet, talk a little bit about how's business, how's weather, how's life, have crack a joke or two, you know, which is not generally funny, but people nevertheless crack that. and then talk a little bit about the past. And this person, you know, almost reclines back, knows, oh God, this guy is going to sell. And as in the customer reclines back, and this the salesperson then has to introduce, pitch, ask, seek, whatever the course of the meeting might be. And then in the middle, there might be phone calls, there'll be some emails that will come in, some guy will just barge into the door, and so on and so forth. And the person might even be in a situation that there'll be, this is hilarious for those listening out in the United States, you will find this fascinating. You know, imagine a customer who's pissed off, who's irate customer, right? Absolutely pissed off with whatever that has happened. So this customer is like, you know, grumpy, you know, imagine an angry bulldog kind of a face, kind of mode, right? And then you have this conversation and this guy goes like on a turbo mode on you, just unloads, unpacks all the anger, frustration, everything. And you're thinking, I'm dead. This deal is gone. This is finished. There's no future. After that load is unloaded, this person is like, hey, what do you want to eat? And you're like, what? Yeah, what's there for lunch? And he's like, no, I don't want lunch. It's okay. No, have lunch. And they don't even wait for you to say yes or no. They'll order lunch for you. They will make sure that you eat the food before sending you back to your wherever you have to go. And this is absolutely inexplicable to someone in say US. If you have an irate customer, most likely you're going to get sued or the deal is done. There is no turning around and you have to kind of get a move on. Like, don't waste my time. It's an end conversation. So communication styles differ so much. Cultural communication styles differ so much that what worked in the US may not work in India. Think of your conversations with your team. You know, in the US, having a conversation with your team is a very politically correct, guarded, careful conversation. In India, it's a little more relaxed. People, and you might say, it infringes on casualness, if at all. It's like, yeah, it's more direct. It's not trying to always beat around the bush. There's a lot more acceptability that, yeah, if the boss says so, boss is having a bad day, probably has a difficult conversation. And so it's okay. It's the conditioning that majority in the Indian corporate culture are quite used to it. It's not like downright bad, which is, of course, there are such instances in every country, every corporate, everywhere in the world. But I'm just saying, generally, you always have difficult bosses, you have difficult colleagues, you have difficult stakeholders. But in India, the conversations are sometimes a little more direct, a little more in your face, if you will. And you might say, wow, why would you want that? But flip to the US, those conversations become so guarded, so careful, because you could get sued for it. You could get absolutely hammered on any of the other ethics hotline or, you know, those kind of things, that you almost land up not expressing the true meaning of what you wanted to say. The absoluteness of the idea is maintained so accurately. And you would say, well, that's a good thing, is it not? Well, absolutely it is. No arguing on that. All I'm saying is, it works for that particular audience. It probably needs an additional tweak while working for a separate audience, purely because culturally, two regions are different. And while ideally we have to probably be on the same page, not disagreeing, not arguing on that, however, it's also, there's an ideal way of looking at things and there is a practical way of looking at things. The pragmatic, the realistic, what's happening at the ground level, at a majority. It's not like an exception. Oh, this one, why should we change the ground rules for this one person? It's not for one person. I'm talking about majority. So then the rule itself starts to become a bit of a misfit, a slight, you know, think of this jigsaw piece not fitting into that picture. And yes, it's difficult to argue, difficult to contest, because it's absolute. The rule is absolutely correct in its definition. There's no two ways about it. But executing the same thought process in India or in an Indian context becomes difficult. So communication styles are one of the most difficult, is one of the most difficult aspects while interacting with these two different cultures. Next, hierarchy and decision making. Simply put, Indian companies often have a strong hierarchical structure with like a top-down decision making. I said so, boss said so, just do it, get stuff done. In contrast, US often emphasizes flatter structures, right, and encourages employees at all levels to contribute to decision making. This often can lead to past struggles and at times even inefficiencies. I'll explain how. In flat organizations, it is everybody gets a say. Great. But you have to also remember the density of population of these two countries. You're talking about 1.4 billion people, and you're talking about 400 million people. Just almost like a no compare. Even if you look at it from a hiring standpoint, right? In India, if you follow open, non-prescriptive approach, what happens is volume of people that come through the system, which is not the case in US. Think of running a campus hire program in US and a campus hire program in India. In the United States, you have to probably go to the campus and invite people to please come for the interview, and you know, call them from boats and, you know, please, oh, the corporate has come and all that. In India, people will shower flowers at you, or the company is coming for placements and all. See, you see, the math is very different when you have more number of people. So for the challenge for Indian leaders is that if you become too quote-unquote democratic and say, okay, what do you think? Well, you could never get the job done. And on the other hand, you be prescriptive and say, hey, don't get intelligent on this, and no disrespect meant. It's like, do these 1, 2, 3, 4 things. That's it, prescription. Not many more things get done. Now, the struggle for Indian managers is to balance between being absolutely open, democratic, and not turning the other side being absolutely dictatorial. What's the balance? What's the right mid path where both get done? And that's a struggle. There is no magic bullet theory saying that here are the 5 things you do and you become this perfect leader. Very difficult. And so hierarchy and decision making are the other areas of conflict which often happen. If you have a stakeholder in the United States who completely thinks, well, this is how the world works, in India, it contradicts. It does not work that way. And many Indian managers struggle to explain this to them, and because they cite the rule book. They cite this is what the definition has been given to us. I am following what the company has prescribed to me, to the T. And you are working for the same company. So how can you contradict? The rules are the same for everybody across the world. And that's a bigger conversation to have. Should the rules be the same for different regions with different cultural connotations? Right? So very important that this hierarchy decision making is eased, is understood in the right context. In India, context is very important. We have to maintain slightly top-down approach to get stuff done. Even if you think of this classical example of SMBs, in United States, SMB is like do-it-yourself, right? DIY is a great culture. In India, it is do-it-for-me. Make it happen for me. That's what most SMBs want you to do. Most customers want you to do. The availability of resources, labor, means that lot many things get done. There could be, and it could translate at all levels of your corporate, right? You could have someone, and there were instances where people were there at the printing station. You know, the printers, the things is called printers, where you used to get printouts. Yeah, there used to be people sitting manning the printer so that when you fire a print, then somebody would fetch that print for you and give it to you. There are folks who would come and ask you for tea and coffee. There are folks who would take care of many other logistical angles, because on one hand, there is the self-service culture. On the other hand, you're giving employment because that kind of labor is available, which is not the case in US. So the culturally, when we would travel to US, like in India, when let me just take a step back, when folks would travel from US to India, and this is many years back, the flight would land at 2:30 in the morning, as do many international flights. There would be many folks from office land up at the airport to welcome them with garlands and all. I was like, even at that time, I felt a little cringy. I was like, oh my God, do you really need to do it that way? Do you need to suck up so much? Do you need to really, you know, but hey, it was like the stakeholders are coming, the, you know, the seniors and whatever, HQ is coming. So it was a big fanfare kind of thing. And cut to the other side, like when we would travel, we were reasonably senior for our situation and position at the time. We would land up with nobody there. And then we had to figure out how to take a cab from the airport to the hotel. Especially for those who were traveling for the first time, they were absolutely at sea. Like, where do I go? Who do I talk to? And stuff like that. And they'd meet you only from Monday to Friday. Nothing wrong with that, you'd say, right? Well, you've come for work. You work on Monday. You go back on Thursday. I'll see where I can fit you in my calendar. And clearly, in many cases, you would seek an appointment before you landed in US. The flip side in India is like, okay, yeah, walk in, come on. Hey, this meeting, ongoing meeting, like, hey, we can do this later. These guys have come. It's a little more welcoming. And you might also argue, if you're on, depending on which side you are, oh, that's very unprofessional. There's a meeting going on and you just stop that meeting and you're talking to me. How rude of that. How rude of you. Well, it's not rude. It's the cultural thing to say, hey, if you have come from so far, let me give you that degree of importance. So, and for some, it can also be subservience. So if this person has come, then I will stop everything else. And that didn't go down well with many people either. That said, so I'm just giving you the cultural contrasts in hierarchy, decision-making, the way it is received is very different. Next. Work-life balance. Well, the US culture may prioritize work-life balance far more than the Indian corporate environments. It's generally understood in India that, yeah, you work a few hours on Saturday and probably start your work for Monday. You start your work on Sunday evening. The more senior you are, the more likelihood you will do that. Although majority of the organizations in India are probably have a 5.5 day work week. So you're talking about anywhere between, say, 2 to 3 hours of work on Saturday. Now, as contrast to US, I think by 2:30, 3 p.m. on Friday, people usually generally switch off. And like by 5 o'clock, 4:35, they're out, partly to beat the traffic. And there's traffic there as well, believe it or not. And so, but we have traffic all the time. So it doesn't matter if it is a Friday or a Monday or a Sunday or whatever. They say, well, when it's if there's something that needs to be done on Saturday, I will address it only on Monday. I mean, of course, there are exceptions. Of course, there are instances where people even from US in the US have responded to emails on a Saturday and Sunday. Those are exceptions. Those are not the rule. By and large, the majority shut shop by Friday 3:30, 4, especially if you're in, say, in the coastal belt, and you probably have planned, you know, you get your boat and then, you know, go on fishing or I don't know, whatever. It's a cultural thing to do and it's absolutely fine. You worked very well. Bear in mind, they also start early. They start at 7 in the morning or 7:30 in the morning, have a quick breakfast, get to be on the desk by 7:30 or 8 o'clock in the morning and work right through till 11, 11:30. have a working lunch, grab a sandwich, then 12 to 5. So it's not that they're working any lesser. They're probably working more in that limited amount of time. Contrastingly, in India, it is a little bit leisurely. Like, oh my God, even if I start at 7, I will not reach before 9:30. There is that traffic element for those who still work from office, right? Whichever part of the country corner that you are in, there is traffic. There is no getting away. And sometimes it becomes exceedingly difficult to reason in instances or situations where you've been delayed in a meeting and said, why are you delayed? I got stuck in traffic. Why didn't you start early? Well, I took 2 hours. I started 2 hours early. How much more early do you want me to start? It's not an excuse. It's a reality. What can you do? There could be a road which you thought you'll take a shortcut, and there is a road roller just standing there blocking the road. Why? Because the guy is having tea across somewhere. It's not that bad, but yeah, it's not completely outrageous for us to expect that at times. So what that does is a 10 a.m. meeting rarely starts at 10 a.m. It will start at 10:10, 10:15, thereabouts. And so you, as a U.S. Person, might get frustrated that, hey, 10:15 means I ought to be there at the meeting at 9:58. Not 10 minutes past 10. But what do you do? This is how the cookie crumbles in this part of the world. And so you make peace with it. But back to our work-life conversation. In India, work-life usually is from Saturday evenings, goes on till Sunday, very late night. And therefore, Monday mornings are all grumpy mornings. I mean, that's probably a case, that's probably a commonality across all both these regions, where Monday mornings seldom start out to be this bright sunny mornings. It's generally, oh my God, it's Monday morning. Oh my God, that meeting is there. And something happens to people right over the weekend. Like, till Friday, you worked with this person closely and everything was right and you fixed everything. But come Monday, everything has gone wrong and you have to reset, restart, redo whole bunch of things. And so that's very common. And so people ease into Monday. If you had to talk to a less grumpy Indian on Monday, you want to talk at around 2 p.m. instead of 10 a.m. You know what I'm saying? Probably not even Monday. Tuesday is even better day. So that's one way of looking at it. So that's how I'd sum up the work-life balance. Next, let's talk about diversity and inclusion. Well, both regions promote diversity, inclusions, the approach and execution slightly differs. Cultural differences in understanding diversity and inclusion might lead to a lot of tensions. The equality factor that is prevalent in the United States is there in India as well, but it differs from, I'm trying to be as politically correct as possible, but idea of bus talk is also to be as simple as possible. Let's put it this way. It's not always, the equality levels are not always the same in India. Why? Because there is years of cultural conditioning, patriarchal conditioning that many people have in their offices. And so it is counterbalanced by more progressive people. And that's a hearty, that's a positive sign. That's a good sign. But suffice to say, if you zoom out completely and say, hey, is it more balanced now? Answer is yes. Was it less balanced earlier? Absolutely. It was more patriarchal, more hierarchical, more man-oriented. It's a man's job and so on and so forth. That gap has narrowed, but there is still a long way to go. We need more women in the workforce to rise up the leadership. And they have to be given those platforms, those opportunities, that encouragement, and that understanding that they are equal, if not better in many instances. And whenever they have gotten that opportunity, they have shown it. But the reality is there's just too many quote-unquote conditioned men in the Indian corporate who have a very different understanding of how women work. Like it or lump it, they exist. The relatively, if you compare that with the United States, that number is very low. It's not to say US does not have conditioned, preconditioned people, but the probability is low, especially in either coasts. See, bear in mind this one thing, especially this for the Indian audiences. Please do not think US is the same everywhere. Oregon, Washington, California, the West Coast or the East Coast, where you have New York, Pennsylvania, Florida, or whatever. The coasts generally are a little more cosmopolitan, even say Chicago in central or Texas. So metros or big cities tend to be a little more cosmopolitan versus the other regions. So it's not the same cultural nuance. What you will find in, say, San Francisco, you may not find the same in, say, New England, for example. Or it'll be slightly different. It's not to say they are any bad or anything, but culturally, you could find a more conservative audience outside these metros, as is probably the case in India as well, right? So you think about folks in Mumbai versus, say, folks in Solapur, Kolhapur. Not to say there is any discrimination there, but saying tier one cities or the people in urban settings set up are exposed to a different global culture than to tier two cities. And the same logic holds true, or the same sentiment holds true for the United States. And so to think that in US you don't have patriarchal men is inaccurate. They are, but perhaps much lesser in number as compared to where what we have in India today. And so the diversity and inclusivity, these conversations are gaining more traction in India, while in the United States is almost an established fact now. Even they have some way to go, but in India we have a long way to go before that diversity inclusivity becomes like a absolute standard across the length and breadth of the country. Last but not the least, social norms. And I think all of these above conversations touched upon social norms in some way or the other. Different countries have different social norms. What's acceptable in one culture might be considered disrespectful, unprofessional even, in the other. And so great example is, typically when in sales environments, you know, when you win a deal or something like that, it's okay to go and pat them on the back and say, you know, sometimes even ruffle the hair, as you see in this cricket or sports field, when, you know, the bowler takes a wicket, the players go and, you know, ruffle their hair and it's like a endearment. It's like a terms of endearment. It's affection and all that. Now, if you did the same thing in Thailand, that would be an insult. If you touch a Thai person's hair, it's considered an insult. You can't touch their head. You should not. And it's almost like sacred zone, if you will. So it's a cultural nuance. We are ignorant of all the cultural nuances that exist. And so it's important that people understand while you engage that what are the cultural nuances that are typical Indian corporate manager will need to bear in mind while they interact with the US managers and the vice versa. Who is there to define it? I don't know if HRBP is doing it, if there is a cultural coordinator in the company, is there a transition manager who does this? I don't know. I've rarely come across instances where there is a bridge, the culture bridge that is established. Because there's the fear of being politically incorrect. There's the fear of being, oh my God, what if somebody complains? What if I get misunderstood? But if you ignore that, then you land up in a very artificial situation where people are not relating to the culture at all. And how does that turn out? How does that work for you? So somewhere, folks in India, we have this reality that this is how India works. Now, we can't boil the ocean. We can make our little changes within our capacity, within our ability, and ensure that the teams around us are well taken care of, are communicated well. That, you know, we are going to work with somebody in EU, for example. Well, their method of communication understanding is so-and-so. Or if I'm talking to somebody in APAC, then this is the general way or the cultural code they follow. Making people more sensitive of the opposite culture neutrally is very important, is the summary statement for either end. Well, that's a wrap for this episode. I hope you got the drift that this is so much, so deep, and so complicated in some ways. I thought, what's the simplest way to say it? And you to say things they are the way they are without trying to be overtly politically correct about it. And again, idea is not to upset anybody or break any rule book. And clearly, I've mentioned right at the start, please do not think that this is a reflection of any of my past, present, or future possible employers. This is a general amalgamation of all the experiences, not just from me or my experiences, but from people around me. You know, so you get to meet so many people, and I've had the fortune and privilege to travel with so many people and learn from their experiences, how they have faced situations at all across the globe, really. And so some of these observations come as an inference from these examples and instances that I shared. Do share your examples, your instances. Love to hear if you got into a tricky situation. How did you come out of it? Or what was a classical misunderstanding that you all had a good laugh about? Or were you one of those people who got in the wrong end of the stick, that you said something which is grossly politically incorrect and it had consequences while you actually did not mean to say that at all, but there was no other way to prove it? If you're an HRBP listening to this, how would you handle this? Would you risk losing people because they inadvertently said something? Would you coach them? Would you preempt the situation, do a cultural divide? Or have you done this? Have you ever had a session where you address the team saying, now we're working with global stakeholders, here are some of the cultural nuances that you might want to keep in mind? Now, I'll leave you with that thought. Think about it. Let me know in your comment suggestions. Do like, share, subscribe with like-minded people who love to hear this kind of easy, slow-paced content. And you know where to reach me. ionisms@gmail.com. You can reach me on Twitter or X, which is #AAYANISMS, ionisms. These are the fastest ways. And if you're so inclined, I'm available to connect on LinkedIn as well. Until we meet the next time, stay well, stay safe, and keep getting your A game to work. This is your host, Ion, and you are listening to Bus Talk. Thank you.